It's a computer code and basically driven by only one thing, a promise.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. He's a medical doctor with a master's degree in computer science and a resume full of pioneering e-business credentials. But here's how Dr. Vadim Levitin describes himself: technology geek and business leader. Levitin co-founded the E-Commerce Institute and for nearly two decades worked around the world helping countries and companies improve their technology, education, and business infrastructures. He's done the same thing with the United Nations as a chief technical advisor. Today on Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, we're wading into the mysterious waters of cybercurrency, blockchain technology, and what it all means for the future and your business. Support for this Montana Public Radio podcast comes from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Vadim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
There is so much in the news about Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain technology. Even this morning, two articles that popped up on my social media page. One saying Bitcoin is going to be zero by the end of the year. It's not worth anything. Another article by an equally qualified professional saying Bitcoin is going to be $50,000 by the end of the year. The first thing that I need to ask you is, can you explain in non-technical terms what both cryptocurrency and blockchain technology really are?
It's very simple thing. It's been around for quite some time. And let's start calling it digital money. In fact, most of the money in the world are digital. Money exists only as far as software exists. 80% of money supply all over the world, basically a computer code. And this is just a new kind of computer code that we call cryptocurrency for the reasons that we can discuss a little later. And it's just a new twist on digital money. It's been around for quite some time. In fact, in the 90s, we had e-gold. We have several hundred cryptocurrencies now. It's a computer code and basically driven by only one thing, a promise. Just like United States dollar is driven by a promise. Our government says this is $1. Trust me. And we trust it. And that's the only reason. It's not backed by anything else. And it's pretty much a computer code as well.
So the currency, the Bitcoins or the Ethereum money, are really not physical coins of any kind. They're pieces of technology, correct?
Definitely. There are no coins. It's just kind of it's a more of a semiotic difference. It's a language issue. It's just a computer code.
And more importantly, I believe, is the blockchain technology that is behind the cryptocurrency.
That's exciting. That's much more exciting than Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, because that's a new way of computing architectures, and it offers a humongous promise for the world. When we started the whole internet thing, I remember all of us, we were going through a lot of explaining. We were explaining it to many people and businesses, and now no one is really explaining internet. We all got it. Then we had social media, the web 2.0 or whatever some people might call it. And then we were explaining that for a while. Well, kind of a blockchain now is in the process of explaining. That's why we're here today. But that's going to go away very soon. It's just a new, fascinating and more advantageous computing architecture.
Blockchain technology is built on blocks. Can you explain what blocks are?
Sure, let's simplify it. As Albert Einstein said, if you can't simplify it, then you probably won't understand it. It's a basic ledger. It's basically a database. It's a distributed database, but it's just a block is just a unit in which you record something. Just like in a journal, you say, well, I spent $5 on buying something. I will make an entry into the journal. That's pretty much what blockchain is. You create many of these blocks with the recording of whatever the transaction that occurred.
So we've gone in 60 or 70 years from entering a handwritten entry in a ledger to hundreds of thousands of entries in a single second by using technology.
You just described a $45 billion opportunity because we still process most of the invoices by PDF files. And it's the estimate is between $45 billion to $45 trillion opportunity. It's all probably should be updated from PDF. This is an old technology. It's kind of in the ancient days. And someone is going to update it, of course. But that's how the economy works, based on invoices.
Give me an example of how blockchain would be used compared to its predecessor technology.
It is virtually limitless because let's start with identity. We're living and moving. We're already living in what is called Internet of Things. Any one of us who has a television at home, it's not a television any longer. It's actually connected to the network, a thing, and it has many microchips. It's a computing device that's networked. So this Internet of Things is expanding and exploding. There are many issues from the computing architecture perspective that comes into play. So we don't have the identity well-defined for each of those millions and millions and millions, and which will be trillions, devices that are connected and talking to each other. They're not necessarily talking to us, but they're talking to each other, and they should be able to recognize each other a little bit better than they do now. They also need to be faster. The problem with computing architectures is that it's driven by the speed of light, and the speed of light is too slow. 300,000 kilometers per hour is not fast enough for computing. And so one of the approaches that blockchain is kind of the premier using is a distributed architecture that kind of diminishes the geographic significance in computing. It pretty much arbitrarily decides where the center of the world is, and it changes every second, all the time. So from identity to speed to any industry, let's say airlines, all of the airplanes will be talking to each other sooner or later. They are now. In fact, I got stuck in the airport once because the airplane didn't get the software upgrade. It's just like Windows upgrading with your PC. Well, they didn't get the upgrade, and so they thought there was something wrong with their wing. Nothing wrong with their wing, they just didn't get the update. And so what happens with updates like this, if we have a networked airplane, then obviously it's not that secure. If it's networked, that means it can be hacked. So one of the advantages of blockchain is that it's a little bit more secure architecture. Some people say dramatically more secure. But they're still kind of working out the issues.
So we're really in the infancy of blockchain technology, reminiscent of when satellite versus cable versus landline communication was being discussed on how best to provide phone service. And eventually there were winners and losers. So among all of these blockchain technologies, will there be winners and losers? Will eventually there only be four or five or six different blockchain technologies being used by business and industry?
Well, at the beginning of kind of a networked world, when the internet started and we started using it for business, we were hoping, at least many people were hoping, that it will decentralize and liberate the marketplace. It hasn't really happened. What happened is what you described in your question. It's a kind of further consolidation. There are probably three, four major players online, from Google to Amazon. And it's just a new mediator. We always had mediators, you know, from banks to government. And now we have just a new set of mediators. What blockchain architecture promise is that since it's decentralized, it is very possible that we won't need it. For example, those of us who use Airbnb, you know, you stay at people's houses. Well, Airbnb is a company. Uber is a company. You don't really need for them to be in existence and charging 25% for their service. You could do blockchain-driven architecture doing exactly the same thing. It will accomplish the same thing. You will come and share the ride, or you will share the room. And you don't need a mediator. You don't need a middleman.
So is this threatening in some industries? For example, if you apply this to banking, you don't need somebody to do, for example, an import-export. You don't need anybody to do the, you know, financial clearance. You don't need any middleman. You can, the buyer and the seller can be linked together with no one else in the system. Is that correct?
Absolutely. We could even raise the stakes, so to speak. I think that the governments of the world are in trouble because there's a certain way they operate, and I think the new architecture, like blockchain, threatens certain functionalities, including printing of the money. And some people call this upcoming technology driven by trust. Trust is the biggest issue. We certainly have a big issue with our government, and most of the countries in the world deal with that. It's driven by mostly trust. Most of the commerce is driven by trust.
And why should you be able to trust blockchain technology more than any other previous technology?
Because it's not corrupt. It's not driven by people. It's destined to be automatic. So in other words, whatever the operation is, whatever the functionality, whatever the transaction, it's going to be run by a machine. It's hundreds and thousands of machines, but there's not going to be any human element. So we have humongous issues with how efficient our governments are. I mean, we elect our government officials, what, every 4 years, every 2 years, every 6 years, depending on which country. That is probably an outdated old model, since the world of technology changes within a year. I mean, blockchain didn't really, no one really asked me any questions about it last year. So within a year, it changed dramatically, and our government hasn't. And actually, the world governments haven't. They're kind of stagnant. So as the world moved on into a different speed, I don't think our political process has moved on to a different speed. That also affects banking and financial institutions and banking and trade and transportation of goods around the world.
And I'm assuming that blockchain technology has application to almost any kind of business, any kind of industry, any kind of social engagement even.
Right. Well, some people call it a platform. It's not really a platform. It's a computing architecture. And as a computing architecture, it is destined to be pretty much dominant. And more likely, everything else in the world, or some people call it Web 3.0, will be run, driven by that architecture.
Well, I saw a very telling news story recently, which showed me how this is moving into the mainstream quicker than most people realize. There's an article that said IBM is launching starter kits for blockchain developers to teach them how to do this. So if IBM is launching that, it means that it's moving away from the theoretical, the potential, to the possible.
Just last week, I went to an IBM presentation, and their CEO called IBM a blockchain company. In other words, the amount of interest and the amount of money that are going to be poured into that new architecture is pretty significant.
So let's take this down a couple of levels. What does it mean to a typical Montana businessman or woman? What do they have to pay attention to? Are they going to have to change their way of keeping track of records? Are they going to have to hire somebody that knows about this? What's going to be the practical impact for businesses?
Well, in the long run, it's going to be dramatic. And when I say long run, we're probably talking about a year to two. In a short run, it's very difficult to find expertise. There are about, my estimate, about 12,000 people in the world who know much or anything about this new architecture and how to implement it. So finding people is difficult. You still should. You should start kind of researching it yourself and learning things. And in kind of understanding not necessarily how it works, but what does it do? Because if you concentrate as a business practitioner on what this blockchain new amazing thing does or can do, then you could come up with a variety of different applications that no one thought of before. And that's a business opportunity.
Sure. One of our previous guests had mentioned that 20% of all the wine in the world is counterfeit. And if you apply blockchain technology to the wine industry, you can be assured that the bottle that you buy, you'll be able to trace it, and it will be available in the public domain, the whole history and background of that product. And that'll apply to every industry, won't it?
Trust. It's the question of trust. Right now, you go to a grocery store, and unless the manufacturer will tell you what's in the box, where it comes from, you really don't know where this coffee or where this drink comes from, who made it, what's the history of it. So you have to trust this manufacturer. Well, I'm involved with the one British outfit that actually traces all foods from the beginning to your table. And it's driven by blockchain, so you can have access, if you want, an instant view of everything. So it becomes a more transparent economic function. So it will probably be applicable to just about any of human activities.
If you've just joined us, we're talking today with Dr. Vadim Levitin about the complex and perplexing world of cryptocurrency, blockchain technology, and what it means for businesses. You mentioned earlier that we're limited by the speed of light. And so the question becomes, if every industry is going to adopt it in the next year or two, and Amazon, has blockchain technology backing up its system and Google and everything else, is there a problem with scalability? I mean, can this be scaled up to the point that everybody can use it and there's capacity out there to make it operate effectively?
Yeah, it diminishes the importance of centralized computing. So we don't need those multi-million-dollar Google farms, the server farms, where they collect all of the information and distribute it and manage it. The computing is done by millions and millions and millions, an endless network of small computers all over the world. It's exponentially unlimited. It can grow in perpetuity.
Well, you bring up an interesting point about how the data is, as they call in the industry, mined. There are data mining operations. So the blockchain companies don't have their own staff, by and large, doing the computations and adding the data to the blockchain. They're contracting that out. So can you explain how that works?
Well, some companies do. Some blockchains, there are three kinds of blockchains. There's a open source, open architecture, public blockchain that anyone who has a 20-digit number can see. Then there's a private blockchain network, and many of the financial institutions are implementing those. And then there's a semi-private, where only parts of the blockchain architecture are available to the public for viewing, and the other parts are not. And it depends on which industry is implementing the technology.
I mean, in Montana, we have blockchain cryptocurrency mining operations here in Missoula and Bonner. There's one that's being developed in Anaconda, Montana, a $50 million facility. What are these facilities doing?
They're solving mathematical riddles. It's cute, but it's not that interesting from a kind of a long-term perspective, because when the blockchain projects started, mining was one of the kind of easy thing to do. You and I could do it on our PC.
It's really not mining, because the coins and mining are misleading terminology by most people. It's doing mathematical computations, right?
Yeah, basically Satoshi Nakamoto, who invented, or we don't know who invented, but at least that's the name behind the Bitcoin, basically offered a variety of different algorithms and mathematical riddles that you're supposed to solve. You won't be able to solve them without some knowledge of computers, because it had a certain algorithm that you had to process. And so gradually they got more and more sophisticated, and you need more and more computing power to solve them. So now you have huge farms all over the world, mostly in China actually, that mine Ethereum, Bitcoin, and 100 and plus currencies.
And they get paid for solving these computations.
Absolutely.
And the computations are what? They're transactions that specific businesses are doing?
No, they're not transactions. It's basically it's kind of a test. And so it's a test more not necessarily for the human intelligence. It is a test for our ability to put together enough computing power to solve the riddle. After you solve the riddle and you become a miner, you're responsible for, well, first of all, you get some currency, which may or may be worth something. Some of it may not be worth anything very soon. We don't really know. And you proceed with managing the network. In other words, they're basically...
That gives you it's like the test. You've now graduated from cryptocurrency U by solving these riddles, and therefore you're qualified to provide the mathematical computation services that the business needs in order to add transactions to its chain.
Right. And a large number of volunteers actually manage the network.
Right. And so... They're managing the network, but let me ask you this. Who controls blockchain?
If it's a private blockchain, then whoever did the private blockchain.
So if
the public blockchain is not controlled by anybody.
So if Amazon develops their own blockchain, they will control it.
Absolutely, if it's private.
If it's private, but if it's public, then who controls it? No one.
No one.
So it's a very egalitarian technology.
It's the upcoming global brain that I was talking about for many years before. Definitely the signs of it with various tentacles throughout our society.
Right. Some people who are overwhelmed by this see this more like the Matrix than something that's going to be useful and helpful. So I want to get back to the other point. What kind of business solutions can benefit from blockchain?
Every one of them. Literally, there's nothing that we do, there's no human activity that cannot benefit from a superior architecture of computing.
So really, when you're looking at this, it is more another tool, just as the internet was, than really a technological innovation in and of itself. The application of this is going to be a tool that will be applied to every business to make them more competitive, more transparent, and more, as you pointed out, trustworthy. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is basically a technology looking for not just an application, but for millions of applications, the same way internet technology that we call TCP/IP, Internet Protocol Technology, was looking for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of apps. We have thousands, if not millions, of a variety of different apps that are driven by this Internet Protocol technology. Then we had Href, what is called in the web, right? How the links, how do you do hyperlinks? That was a new kind of twist to this technology. And that also developed, was a basis to develop hundreds and thousands and thousands and thousands of applications. We're probably going to see, not probably, we're already seeing it, the explosion of innovative applications for the blockchain technology as we're learning a little bit more about it and we're getting people to study it in college and we'll get some specialists. For now, it's just very difficult to find anyone who knows much about it.
Assuming our listeners now kind of understand that blockchain technology is just a next generation souped up advanced technology application that's available, across the board. It's a new computing capability and a new technology. I want to switch a little bit to the currency, cryptocurrency, because that's equally confusing in some ways. One day Bitcoin is $20,000 for one, and then all of a sudden it's $5,000 for one. There are people thinking it's going to $50,000 a coin by the end of the year, and some people think it's going to be zero. There's nothing backing it. It's not based on anything. And that applies to every other of the hundreds and hundreds of cryptocurrencies. Given this unpredictability, why would people either invest or shouldn't invest in a cryptocurrency? Because it's more than just Bitcoin. There are hundreds and hundreds of different cryptocurrencies available to buy.
Well, obviously, why people invest in speculative financial tools, because they want to make some money, or they're hoping to make some money. It is a risky investment. No one really knows what's going to happen to which currency when, because it's not driven even by any particular data behind it. There's no reporting of financial performance. It's just pure software code that people speculate on.
And in some cases, for example, in Bitcoin, no one knows for sure who actually was the inventor of that particular blockchain code that's being used by Bitcoin.
Right. It's not necessarily that important, because before that inventor kind of put it together, those technologies existed before, and we know who invented those. So it had kind of a new twist to it. That's what Satoshi Nakamoto did. With a new twist, it turned into a Bitcoin. It had more of a political drive behind it. It's a whole cyberpunk movement trying to isolate the production of money from the governmental function. So it was an interesting kind of a political experiment, actually.
So as I see it, and you can maybe correct me or validate this, there are going to be winners and losers. Some blockchain technologies will not be adopted by companies and businesses. They find out there's glitches to them, or they're not fast enough, or somebody can penetrate them. And then there will be other ones that become winners. And so that's what people are gambling on, that the particular cryptocurrency that they're buying, there'll be an announcement that Wells Fargo is going to use this blockchain, and then the value of it's going to go through the roof.
Well, that's possible. It's more likely that we're going to end up with a branded cash, as I call it. In other words, any one of us can issue branded cash. You could call it Arnie's money, and pretty much put together, a coding system and software production. It's not very hard. It's called ICO, initial coin offering, ICO, and you could offer that to the public. Sooner or later, it's probably going to get consolidated in some organized fashion, and more likely we will end up with hundreds and hundreds of different branded currencies.
I'm interested in how Bitcoin technology, cryptocurrency, blockchain applies to specific industries. So, for example, how would this work in healthcare?
Well, as you know, healthcare is coded. Everything you do in the hospital, every medical practitioner, whatever they do, it has a code assigned to it. We've had this code system for quite some time. It's called ICD. And they keep upgrading it. So any new operation, anytime you get a shot, anytime anything happens to you, there's a code. Well, it's fine. It's a great thing. It's just kind of describes all of the activities in the healthcare setting. And it was designed for primarily one reason. We had a third payer system where someone had to pay for the services provided, and they wanted this kind of detailed information. Well, blockchain technology offers superior architecture to describe and make transparent a very trustworthy things that you should be paid for. It's just a matter of time. There are lots of activity already in healthcare, applying healthcare to blockchain technology, from small to large. There's hardly one serious company in healthcare who's not interested in doing something.
So everybody is now in the game. They're all looking at how to apply it, which technology to use, what the implications are, how to monetize it, how to make money off of it, all of those things. That's all going on as we speak.
Initially, what started happening, the Bitcoin got famous and other cryptocurrencies got famous. My analogy is, the cryptocurrency is a fortune cookie, and the blockchain technology is the fortune inside the cookie. And most of us don't buy fortune cookies because they taste so great. We buy them because we're interested in the fortune inside. It's kind of an interesting experiment for us. And I think that's exactly what that's good metaphor for blockchain.
Dr. Levitin, you went to medical school in Russia, emigrated to the United States. How did you learn, and how did you make the transformation from being a physician to being an electronic commerce guru?
Yeah, it started with genetic algorithms. because it was so close to home. And I kind of started playing with genetic algorithms, but you put together little pieces of code, and then they introduce to each other, and they produce an offspring, and more offspring and more offspring, and you could speed it up. So you could have 1,500 different generations of new population out of something that you created, you know, a few days ago. And then I moved to the neural networks, which looked exactly to me like a human brain, and just the parallels were so amazing and close. I just couldn't resist.
And then, of course, you went to school and got a degree in electronic commerce.
Yes.
So how do people that are listening to the show who have their appetite further whetted about all of this, how do they learn more about what's going on? What's the go-to source to read and to keep you up to speed?
Well, we have an explosion of content online about blockchain, from videos to speeches to societies being formed. It's a very busy place, and you could learn a lot just by researching without leaving, you know, your office. Just research on your own computer. Sooner or later, you probably have to come to some place where you would have to employ a professional, if you're lucky to find one, or maybe can educate one. Obviously, there's an IT staff that most of the companies have, and it's natural for them to move towards blockchain architecture because they understand computing architecture. So this is probably where you're going to be looking for. Some people, I get lots of calls nowadays who are trying to invite me to be on their either advisory board or governing board because they're looking for this kind of expertise just to guide them into what is it that we're going to do with that technology, if anything.
Are universities now training more people to understand how to do this work?
Not yet.
Well, I'm assuming you believe they should be.
Absolutely. I'm shocked that no one offers comprehensive programs and the comprehensive courses in blockchain. The only guess I have is that it's very difficult to find an educator who can educate other people, because those educators, they're just busy. They're busy and kind of working very hard trying to create something else.
Last question for you. When will the typical average person on the street be impacted by blockchain?
They're impacted now. It's already behind most of the working that we see. We just don't recognize it just because we don't care, and not necessarily that we should care. But pretty much everything will be affected. It is a new architecture of networked society. And it's going to affect everything from the way the government functions to financial institutions, and it's already happening. As I said, IBM is a blockchain company. Microsoft Azure has a blockchain initiative. Everything is pretty much moving to the cloud that is driven by blockchain.
Vadim, thank you. This has been a fascinating conversation. It leads me and hopefully our listeners to think more about blockchain and to learn more about it. Again, thank you for being with me.
Thank you. That was wonderful.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all of our shows. Join me next time when our guest will be Jim Lauterbach, Executive Director of VidCon, the mega conference for video creators and their fans. Jim will share his insights into the explosion of the on-demand video entertainment industry. Once again, I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. This show is made possible with support from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Support for this Montana Public Radio podcast comes from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.